messing up that crack house pretty bad, McGonagall. Did you really have to break so much furniture?
You tell me, Chief. You had a pretty good view from behind your desk.
You're off the case, McGonagall.
You're off your case, Chief.
What does that mean, exactly?
It means he gets results, you stupid chief!
Dad, sit down.
All right, hey guys, and welcome to the Three Drinks In podcast, episode number 186. I think it's 186. I did this last time too. It is 186. I am your host, Vince. Over there is your host, Phil.
Hey.
There's Phil. In this episode, we are talking about the Netflix original movie, The Take, starring Idris Elba and that guy who gets stabbed in Game of Thrones. Before we do all that, though, I want to remind you that Three Drinks In is available on all streaming services, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. Make sure that you subscribe, tell your friends, and leave a review. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Three Drinks In Pod. You can like us on Facebook, and you can email us at threedrinksinpodcast@gmail.com. All right. My glass is clinking in the microphone now, I can tell.
Yeah. What are you drinking?
Rye whiskey. Just having a nightcap before going to bed, eventually. So yeah. The Take, starring Idris Elba.
Yeah. Why did we watch this?
Well, Regal Cinemas announced it's closing every location it has in the United States, so that factored in pretty big to this. But this was like number 10 in the U.S. on Netflix like a week or two ago, and I'm a big Idris Elba fan. I got really into Luther, and like I watched the first few seasons of that on the BBC, and oh, okay. No, he's good as a cop, and he was great in The Wire. He was excellent in The Wire, and it's like, yeah, I'll give it a shot. And then I looked it up and didn't really get great reviews, and then I saw like I hovered over it too long when watching it, either it was like on my phone or on the TV, and it played like a trailer. It began to play like a little bit of the movie as a like a little amuse-bouche. And is the scene where he asks the guy to steal his wallet when he has him in like the little like padded cell. And it was a fairly interesting scene. I'm like, oh, all right, maybe this is a cool story about how a straightforward but gruff CIA operative recruits a unlikely hero in the in the pickpocket into a life of crime and away from a life of crime and into service to, whatever. And, what the hell? There's literally nothing else happening cinematically right now, so I might as well give this a shot. And I'm sorry.
You should be.
They can't all be gold. But this was not good.
I'd rather watch Enola Holmes 10 more times. And watch any more of these kinds of movies. Like,
yeah. I mean, to be fair, this was worse than Enola Holmes by a long shot, and I really didn't like that movie, and we had a whole thing about it last week, but like, I had no expectations for this going in, kind of like The Old Guard, just kind of like, oh, okay, it's fine. But this is worse than The Old Guard.
Oh, yeah, this is definitely worse than that.
Like, the metric we have for these things is shifting so rapidly because what we're willing to accept as passable entertainment is really kind of depressing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, these things are, I guess they're easy to churn out. I don't know. This is like the Law and Order of dumb action movies. Like they just spew the lines that need to be said. So I have basic gist of what's happening. And they have the shaky cam action scenes, so it's like disguised enough that they're really stuntmen. And then the movie's end. Movie ends, and I'm like, all right, what was the point of all of that? I mean, at least there wasn't that much of a setup for a sequel. Because I was like, oh, good, now I never have to watch this again. Like, I don't want to watch another Idris Elba, Richard Madden movie. Like, yay.
So there's several, you know, subtle layers of this kind of crap, it seems. You know, like you have movies like this, which are kind of similar to, what was that movie we saw with Thor and the Indian kid?
Extraction?
Yeah, Extraction. So like, this was of a similar vein to that. There really wasn't anything to distinguish it in terms of its purpose and its execution in a way. And I don't know if execution is the right word. Like, that was a really well-made movie in terms of, like, there was a competent guy attached to direct. There was pretty good action sequences. Plot was simple and straightforward. And it, you know, it had some tension to it. You knew kind of what was going to go down, essentially, but you know, it was well executed. There was a gimmick scene in it, in that long single take shot, which provided, if nothing else, just some distraction from the, you know, the basic simplicity of the plot, which is to get the kid from point A to point B whilst engaging in all these obstacles. This was just that, was devoid of any sort of expertise or creativity. And that's kind of like what we're going to get, I think, for a while now, or what at least will be available to us when we've burned through all of our, you know, Star Trek episodes and, you know, exhausted everything else. We'll have this stuff. Yeah, we'll give it a shot. What the hell? And it's just astoundingly, it's somewhere between mediocre and bad. That really weird gray area.
Yeah, it's extremely mediocre, I'd say.
Yeah, it's extra medium.
Everything is the barest of bone. We have just enough of everything for it to make sense and not be like offensive. You know, it's not like it's so stupid that I want to claw my eyes out. And neither is Law and Order. Like, in Law and Order is, I have cops, I have bad guys, I have the hapless people in the middle that I interview. And we go through the motions of interviewing people, and we drag them in, and we make threats, and then we, you know, somebody ups the ante, and another, they find another body, or a witness turns out to be not who they say. Same thing here. I got the CIA agent who only cares about following the rules, and he's got the loose cannon cop who only does everything by his own book. And you've got the hapless thief who's kind of caught in the middle but has a heart of gold. I was like, oh my God. And they were just spewing exposition at everybody. Like, they give you like the voiceover about Richard Madden's mother character. Like, they call the mother and she like tells them everything about the son.
Yeah, I think that was my favorite scene. It was just like, people overestimate how much the government knows about you, I think, in general. And, you know, like, one of the hilarious things about the Jason Bourne movies, as they got, you know, crazier and crazier, was just how unbelievably efficient at extracting information from the internet and from other resources the CIA's super duper black squad was. So, like, you know, and like, by the time you get to the third movie, somebody says something over a phone line that triggers, you know, because every phone call is being monitored all the time. The guy says one trigger word, and then all of a sudden, you know, they're on to him, and they're tracking him down in London, and this and that. And who's that guy? And, like, facial recognition software that figures out who he is. And, like, it happens so quickly that you're like, okay, well, this is nonsense. And that's sort of, like, the same thing was done here, but they just skipped all, like, the fun computer graphics and the clicky and beepy noises that, you always hear computers make on TV. Do you ever notice that? Like on NCIS, whenever a window pops up on my screen, it makes literally no sound whatsoever. It's a visual thing. It appears.
And that's the same when, in the 80s, whenever they would be on the phone, they would slam the phone down. They would hang up the phone. They would hang it on the wall. And now you don't do that with cell phones. But cell phones always beep when you hang up. And people always press it with their whole thumb, like they're trying to squish this freaking screen, you know, like, otherwise I'm too stupid to figure out that they hung up the phone. I'm like, whoa, why do they leave this guy on a pocket dial?
I'm marginally convinced that Motorola and Samsung are developing foldable screen phones just so cop shows and cop movies will once again have the very satisfying, like, take your right hand and then with your index finger, just flip it closed in a very dramatic and, you know, visually specific motion of like, this phone call is terminated. And then you just, you know, it's like when the flip phone went away, that was the next best thing to slamming the phone down. That kind of angry, like, swat they would do with their phone to close it.
Yeah, like the,
damn it.
You know, like they're hitting someone upside the back of the head. Yeah. So, I mean, there's no subtext to this film. It's all text. It's super liminal.
It's like Shakespeare in that regard.
Yeah. You know, I mean, and even there was like the one moment at the end when Idris Elba was going to turn in the thief and the girl. Because at this point, he's been the guy who beats up everybody. He's like ready to torture them, puts guns in people's mouths to make them talk. And then he has like that one flicker of doubt. And they're like, what's the problem, Briar? You got an issue with these people? And he's like, no issue, man. Even though he kind of is like, I've come to respect him. And I'm just like, oh my God.
So
this is awful.
just to recap, if for no other reason than my own sense of clarity, the story is about the guy from Game of Thrones, whose name I don't recall because they didn't really give it that much. He's a pickpocket. He picks up a bag belonging to the girlfriend of a guy who you're supposed to believe is in a political revolutionary terrorist group in France. And she goes to blow up the headquarters of the Nationalist Party, or the can't think of the name of it, but, you know, Marine Le Pen's, headquarters. And she chickens out at the last minute, and she's like, I can't blow up this place. I didn't think I was going to kill anybody. You know, like the night squad shows up. And so she runs out, and the pickpocket sees her and steals the bag and doesn't realize there's a bomb in it and leaves it somewhere, and then it explodes. And instantly, his face is plastered all over the news saying, this is the guy who was standing near the bomb when it went off. Just like 20 other people were. And they start to go after him. And that's when they bring in the CIA. Like the beginning, how the whole thing gets going gets muddy to me. I guess because there's a terrorist connection, they think. They're trying to blame it on a mosque. And I forget.
Well, they're looking for him anyway or something. I don't know. They think they're revolutionaries or something. So they're like, we need to deal with this before the French police find him. Like they're already spying. Oh, that's what it was. So they got an image of him, the French police, like a blurry image of him walking away from the explosion. And they had, the CIA had cameras set up, and they caught like a really good image of him. And they saw him drop the bag off. So it looked like he'd planted the bomb. And they were like, well, we can help him out. We can tell the French. And they're like, we can't, because we have his illegal satellites here that we're spying on people. They're going to want to know where we got this information. So you have to go and get this guy before the French find out that we're spying on him.
Okay. Yeah. I remember that now vaguely.
Yeah. Because they have the safe house there that's like also a secret interrogation chamber. And they weren't supposed to have that there either.
Right.
So like when they're having like dinner or whatever, like the woman was like, I don't know what that is. You know, it's like a Mission Impossible booth in there where they're like torturing people and pulling out fingernails or whatever.
Yeah.
So
okay.
That, so like that's why. And then like Idris Elba, of course, doesn't listen to anyone. And he takes everything. He like he just carries the plot of the movie on his back because every 5 seconds they're like, bring the guy in. And he's like, no way. I've got work to do. You're off your case, chief.
Yeah, so they get him, and then it's like a cat and mouse game, and they're sort of isolated because they can't tell the French government what's going on. But then you find out that more and more of the French government is in on it, and it just kind of snowballs, and you realize that the guys are all the bad guys are also cops, and you think that they're all racists, but they're not. They're just trying to make it look like it's a race riot, and they're trying to break into the bank to steal the money.
Yeah, it's very Die Hard in that way.
In what way? Oh, you're making it look like it's one thing when it's actually something else.
Yeah, you're actually just trying to steal money, but you're using another pretense as a setup.
Yeah, and I guess it was fairly, like, that's the one thing I kind of bought, because, I mean, it was weird. So, like, I should say that I bought it, but I shouldn't have, because most Americans watching this really don't know much about French politics, and neither do I should say, but I know a little bit. So this was made back in 2016, right around the time that Donald Trump was getting himself elected to the presidency. And over in France, around the same time, the Nationalist Party, which is basically, you know, they're not Nazis because they're French, and that would be funny. But they don't like people who are not from sort of old school white French. And so Marine Le Pen, the daughter of some, I forget the other guy, her father was a famous nationalist politician, made a pretty big splash in their elections that year, that summer, I recall. She wasn't successful, but it kind of made the news. And so for a while there was this little panic in Western Europe, you know, between that and Brexit. All of a sudden, you know, Whitey was going to rise up and take back their countries from all the people who've emigrated from Asia and Africa. And so they were trying to sell themselves as racists to distract you from their ultimate goal in the story, which was that they were just bank robbers. They were trying to figure out a way to create a giant distraction to break into the vault and steal the money. But the first thing they did was blow up the, you know, their own headquarters, theoretically, and then try to blame the mosque. And so it was fairly clever misdirection, but if you thought about it for a second, if you knew anything about politics in France at the time, like, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense that you'd, like, maybe they're an ultra, you know, orthodox faction of the Nationalist Party that's willing to blow up their own headquarters and blame it on the Muslims. I don't know. But it was you kind of required you to know something about France at the time. And I mean, this was, I think, an American movie. It was financed by Amazon, and I think maybe it was British as well. But like, they're all playing Americans.
I mean, it was called Bastille Day in France.
Yeah,
because it takes place around that time, which is a big national holiday for them. You know, and then most people don't know what Bastille Day is in America, so they changed it to the take because that's what it's about. Although that's supposed to be a surprise.
Yeah, that kind of gives it away, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's such a generic title that, like, you really can't say, like, oh, that, you know, like, I don't know. It's just not good.
I mean, by then I didn't care. Like, I didn't care what they were doing.
At that point, it's really not all that important either.
Yeah, it was just kind of like, they're the bad guys. I mean, they obviously look like bad guys. You know, they're like schlubby looking Frenchmen. They don't comb their hair, and they look tired, like they've been drinking wine all night. So it's like
big furrowed brows all the time.
Yeah, like
bushy eyebrows.
Bushy eyebrows and 8 day stubbles. I was like, clearly they're the bad guys. Like whatever,
they look tired all the time. These French mercenaries are exhausted. They must be evil.
I can't believe it. They're not out there volunteering at the puppy shelter. So there's a surprise.
So basically, what it ends up being is that this guy just gets caught up in it, you know. And then you get that hilarious scene where, like, we know everything about this guy in 5 minutes. We called his mom, and she told us all about him. Like, really? What an odd thing to do. So, yeah, they have to chase him down, and it's just a kind of a cat and mouse between Idris Elba and the evil French police and the guy on the phone who yells at him a lot, tells him he's off his case, and then that's sort of it. It's not complicated. It really, I mean, like, as far as action movies go, The Old Guard was more complicated, kind of in a good way. It was like they kind of thought about the, you know, the intricacies of what it would be like to live forever and, like, being, you know, invincible. But,
yeah, I mean, that one just was weighed down by all of its ridiculous world building and concepts and stuff.
Yeah.
No, this didn't need any of that. So.
This was freed of that. I mean, which it could have benefited from some less than like ham fisted exposition dump. You know, it would have been nice for some context. Like, why were they spying on the French? There didn't really seem to be it didn't make a lot of sense to me. Like in the Bourne movies, which I'm kind of comparing this to, like they have safe houses all over Europe, and that first movie takes place all over France and Italy, and I forget where, I think it ends in France or Britain, but like you learn that there's like this ultra ruthless subdivision of the CIA, and they kind of do whatever they want. You don't get that sense here because they keep telling Idris Elba that he's the ultra ruthless guy who doesn't follow the rules that they're laying out. Well, they aren't following the rules. So, like, there's no sense of anyone's purpose in why they're doing the stuff that they're doing. They're just, you know, they're just spying on the French for no reason. And
I think the idea is that they spy everywhere. And, like,
which is fine, but, like, that's, there's just no sort of substructure to what they're doing. Yes, they're the CIA. Yes, they're spies. But at the same time, it's like, well, okay, fine. But there needs to be context for what they're doing. They just kind of hang out in France and drink wine and watch people on CCTV cameras. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's sort of the impression that they moved Idris Elba there because he's being punished. You know, like he's such a loose cannon that they can't have him doing anything else.
Yeah, I mean, the guy does say, like, because, you know, they move him out of the Middle East to France, and I guess they were trying to create the impression, like, this is, like, a very light-duty assignment, because you're in France. There's not a whole lot of, like, major terrorism going on in France, which is not entirely true. It's one of those odd things about European cities is that they tend to have, like, enclaves of minority groups that set up shop in such a way that this was true of the U.S. in the early part of the 20th century, but like, you know, Little Italy and Chinatown and like, but in France, the police don't go into certain sections of the city, you know, like Paris, because the people who live there essentially control it in a weird way. Like, if there's something going on in Chinatown in Manhattan, like, the cops will still knock on your door and attempt to, you know, confiscate any counterfeit handbags that you have, which is all that they do in Chinatown. But, you know, it's sort of different in European cities. So, but, yeah, I guess you're right. Like, he's being punished. It's kind of a powder puff assignment to be in Paris as opposed to being in Baghdad or wherever he was previously. And, that wasn't quite hammered home because things get real really fast, and so it's just as dangerous in Paris as it is.
I mean, his only mission was to go and get Richard Madsen's character, and like they remind him of it constantly. Like, you're just supposed to bring this guy in so we can question him, and like he just goes off on his own and starts solving the mystery right away. You know.
To be fair, that guy does, you know, run up to the roof and try to like escape. By the way, that was the worst roof chase sequence I've ever seen.
Yeah, well, all the action was not good.
It was really not good.
Jason Bourne type stuff. You know,
I wouldn't even so like that's not good, but that's a stylistic choice. It's not one that I like. I think it's, you know, it's misguided in its attempt to make you feel that the action is happening so quickly the camera couldn't even capture it, which is dumb because it's a camera and the camera will capture whatever you point it at. It's just that simple. So this was just simply badly designed and executed and filmed. Like the chase sequence on the roof is just clumsy and weird. And you had these two stunt actors running up and down on a roof with the occasional like glance back close up to say, oh, look, it's really these famous actors running on a roof in Paris. It's not that, it's not even close. But like, it wasn't tense. It was just clumsy. It was people like bumbling around on a tin roof.
Yeah. I mean, at one point he was about to fall off. Like he like slid to the edge and the gutter falls down. And then the next cut, he's jumping off of like that side to somewhere else. And I actually sat up. I was like, wasn't he just on the edge of the roof? Like, how is he jumping from a part of it now? Like, it wasn't even edited well.
Yeah. Oh, no, the editing was terrible.
You know? So I was like, this is really not good. And so in a movie like Extraction, where you have that big, long action take, and even in the end, when they're in, they're getting shot at on the bridge and everything. You know, there's two kinds of action scenes. There's the exciting ones, and there's the ones that actually advance the plot or tell us about a character or something. You know, this movie didn't have either of those. They were just action scenes just to pad the length. I mean, it wasn't a long movie. It was only an hour and a half. You know, so like at the end of these scenes, Idris Elba just ends up beating up the guy, and that's it. You don't learn anything about his fight style or about how ruthless he can be. They just stop. Like, they're just like, all right, it's long enough. Let's go on to the next thing now. Yeah. You know, like, they have the big fight where they're in an armored, they're not an armored car, they're in, like, the van, and they're about to be executed by the undercover cops who are secretly bad guys. And the three of them, the thief, the girl, and Idris Elba, like, fight off these two guys. And I thought there'd be, like, a moment where, like, they learn to team up or they work together or something, but there isn't. They just beat the crap out of each other, and Idris Elba does most of the work, and then it's over. And like that's a wasted opportunity. That's not a good scene. You know, it's the difference between this kind of a movie and like Mission Impossible.
Right.
You know, like, which is pretty much the gold standard now for slightly smarter action films.
The basic problem with the movie is that the movie doesn't have any characters in it. It just, you know, it just has plot points that it has to hit. And so nobody behaves in the movie with any sort of, you can't see anybody making decisions. You just see them like, okay, the script says that I go over here and hide under this chair. Like, the best example of that is the end of the movie. So like, the super duper bad cop, the guy who's running the whole show, gets a message to him like, you know, a Russian is willing to goes to that black guy he was like who was his fence from before, and he says like, and gets him to meet him at like Notre Dame of all places, and
that's a place people know, right?
Yeah, it was clearly a not Notre Dame, and so the second that Richard, what's his name? Madsen? Samsonite?
Madden.
Richard Madden shows up there. he recognizes that guy. Now, here's my question. Had he ever seen him before?
Yeah, they had the video footage of him.
So he was dragged in for questioning with that guy before?
Well, no, not with that guy.
But he recognizes him.
At Notre Dame.
Right. He's like, are you Sergey? And he looks at him and goes, it's you.
I don't know now.
Like, okay, so let's pretend, because it's funnier this way, that he recognizes a guy who the audience knows who he is, but this character has never met this man before in his life. As far as he knows, he is a Russian gangster willing to sell him a passport ticket out of the country. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, it was sort of a major thing where, like, he realizes that this is, you know, the bad guy. And, like, no one knows that this is the bad guy. That's sort of the thing.
I mean, by then my brain was already off, so I wasn't paying that much attention.
I actually watched this scene about 2 hours ago because I was tired. And I was like, 10 minutes left to go. I go, you know what? I'll just finish this tomorrow. And I didn't even bother to finish the movie last night. I finished it today, and like, you know, about an hour ago.
Yeah, I mean, that whole scene was, at the end, was pretty dumb.
It was incredibly dumb. And it was sort of a microcosm of the entire film. He gets there, he meets the man he's never seen before, he recognizes him, bizarrely, and then it's so clear to everybody, especially the streetwise kid who can pick pockets like a genius, that this guy, when he says, I'm going to give you a passport and $100,000 to give me my $500 million, just come down with me to these catacombs where nobody will ever see you ever again. Like, there's no way that guy would have done that. Like, I get it, you're desperate and you want to, like, but it was so clearly a trap. I was like, well, why is he just going along with it?
Well, I think by then, like, you're supposed to know that he's now... So, like, that whole part, like, what the whole part of that is that he takes the money and runs at the bank scene and gets away. And, like, if you're an idiot, you're supposed to think, like, oh, no, he really only cares about himself. And then the movie keeps going and you realize that, no, he's had a change of heart and he's going to help out Idris Elba and give the money back and, like, pretend that he's running away. So, like, I figured it all out in about 5 seconds. But there's not enough setup before that to make you think that he's actually a bad kid. You know, like we already know he's the thief with a heart of gold. We know he's not going to do this. And we also know that the bad guy isn't going to get away with it. So it's like, we're just going through the motions, which is most of the film.
Yeah. And it really was like, and so like they get him down to the basement of Notre Dame, and Idris Elba comes out and you think he's alone. He puts the gun to so like they're all pointing guns at each other. And the bad French cop's like, I'm going to shoot this guy if you don't put your gun down. And he's like, him? I don't really care. And then he shoots him. Yeah. And you're like, oh, look, he shot him. I wonder what clever bulletproof vest was hidden under his coat that made it. And then, like, 9 more cops step out from behind the thing. You're like, why did you even bother to shoot him? You've outnumbered this guy, like, 7-1. Why didn't you just, you know, not shoot the guy in the bulletproof vest? And so, like, it was just written in. Nothing was there to, you know, provide any functionality. There's nothing did anything. They just went through the motions, and that was the end of that. It was just by the book, like, come here, punch your time clock, get, you know, your time card, get into the fight in the van, punch out, go to craft service.
Yeah.
You know, and that's just...
I don't know why Idris Elba does these movies. He does a lot of them. You know, like, he was even in the Fast and the Furious spinoff, and he was having a good time, but it wasn't a good movie.
Those are big American movies. I'm not surprised that he wanted to be in a movie with The Rock. You know, like,
but he likes to do these like mean cop action things. I don't know why. Because he never gets a good one.
No, he doesn't. And so he's had sort of a weird career. I don't know too much about it, but, like, you know, he kind of came to my attention, you know, the guy was in his 40s playing kind of a roguish type cop in this show, Luther. And which is a good show, but not a great show. And, like, it was not as well written as other shows, but the characters in it were fantastic. And the woman that played opposite him in that, Ruth something or other, she's really great. And it was one of those sort of, like, high drama type cop shows that was a little over the top, but unusual, different than a typical American cop show. And then, like, he does action movies, and then he does Thor. He was, what's that guy's name? That's the, like, the guardian of the gatekeeper thing. Or...
Oh yeah, he was Heimdall.
Heimdall, yeah, some, yeah. I think he just acts. I mean, I've said this before about Michael Caine. Like, you know, British actors, they just work all the time. You know, it's a different way of thinking about acting than it is in Hollywood. Hollywood, you're very careful and you pick your roles and, you know, you don't overextend yourself or put yourself in a bad movie because then you end up in movie jail and then you never get to do anything ever again. British actors don't seem to have this sort of trepidation about being in a bad movie. Like, they don't really care that much. You know, if it's a big tent pole that doesn't do well, then that's not going to look good. And you become hard to market after that. But they'll do a lot of, like, under-the-radar, crappy, you know, budget, which is what this was, you know, budget action movies. Because they know no one's going to see them, you know? And they just kind of churn them out, and they get paid, and they move on to the next thing. But I think you're right in that he seems to be looking for... Because he would have been a phenomenal James Bond. Like, I've been saying that for years, just because... He's a big, hulking guy. He's extremely handsome. And he looks like he could take care of himself. And he's a good actor. He would have been a phenomenal James Bond. He's just way too... He's in his 50s, I want to say now. So that's not going to happen. So maybe he's just trying to make these movies because it's... you know, this is fun. They'll pay me a fair amount of money. And I'll get to do a bunch of them. And I don't know. That's the only thing I can think of is why he would keep making movies like this. He just, you know, wants to work, and, you know, it's fun to do action movies where you get to run around with a gun and, you know, jump this and, you know, wear a squib and get shot and do a whole thing. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's what they're making, too. They're making movies like this. The real passion projects, the real interesting acting work, that there's some of that, but there's not as... There's more... BS movies like this being made than there are, like, you know, the gems like, you know, Palm Springs or any of the other kind of weird low budget stuff that A24 is making. You know, he's almost too mainstream for those kind of movies. Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, these are much easier to make than that. So, I mean, I'm not surprised. It's just that I guess I'm a little surprised how many there are because I'm like, it's like, we can watch this. Like, we could, or there's another 50,000 action movies like this we could watch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was, I'll say, very disappointed in his accent. Like,
well, he was supposed to be what, from Connecticut?
Well, so I got into a thing. I have a thing with accents. I enjoy hearing how different places, how language and words are used in different places. Like, watching the Great British Baking Show to me is hilarious because there are people from all over Britain. Britain is really tiny. And for such a very small place, they have such a wide variety of accents that it really, really cracks me up. So I got into watching all these YouTube videos with a guy whose name I can't think of, Eric something or other. I think it was Wired was the YouTube channel. It was the Wired magazine channel, where this guy was an accent coach in Hollywood, and he would just talk about was like four or five videos about him critiquing actors' accents in movies. And, you know, like everything from, you know, Daniel Day-Lewis in all of his movies, which he's almost entirely pitch perfect in every single thing he ever does, and like Kevin Costner in Robin Hood, where it's like, there's nothing happening here. This is just weird. So this guy specifically singled out Idris Elba as doing a really good African-American Baltimore accent, which is different than a white person Baltimore accent. If you, and like from watching The Wire, like the guy who plays like the Polish cop, like they speak very differently than the black guys do, which is different cultures. And I mean, I remember when I watched that show, I had no idea he was British because he came across as like so very specifically not British that like I was stunned when I found out. So the fact that this, he just kind of phones it in. You're like, what is he supposed to sound like exactly? Like, I didn't need it to be that specific, but some consistency would have been nice. And it was very clear, like, he was just trying to do his best American accent some of the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, why have him, I guess because it's the CIA. I mean, why have him be American at all?
Yeah, I guess they didn't want to make them MI6. That would have been too on the nose. I mean, probably would have been just as good if, you know, if they had been British as opposed to Americans. I you know, Americans weren't painted in a particularly bad light that it would have made, you know, wouldn't have made sense to have them be British. I don't know.
Yeah.
It was disappointing. And
so was this movie.
Yeah, everything about it just really, really mediocre.
Yeah. Well, it's not like everything that every actor does is great. You know, you were like, well, it really has Idris Elba. I'm like, yeah, but it really could not be that good. And we were right.
So. Yeah. I mean, sometimes you got nothing to go on, but like a kind of a dodgy trailer and the cast. You go, oh, okay, yeah. Fine. So.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's, it's... Good.
I mean, it's too bad that Richard Madden doesn't get more work.
You know. What else has he been in besides Game of Thrones?
He was in like the remake with Cinderella. I think he was the prince or something.
He's very handsome.
He was in Rocket Man, that with, you know, Joel Edgerton.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's supposed to be in the Eternals, the Marvel movie coming out.
Hmm.
I don't know much about them, and I don't know when it's coming out now, because God knows.
Really?
You know, but he mostly gets by on his good looks. But he was good in Game of Thrones.
Yeah. I've been watching. So YouTube really just throws at you the things that you watch a little bit of. And so I've been watching bits and pieces of Game of Thrones on YouTube. Like little clips here and there, because I don't have the stomach for that whole show. But like, if I know what happens, it says like, this is the scene where this happens. Like, oh, okay, I'll watch that.
It's, oh, okay.
And like, that show was so great. I could tell it was great because it's extremely expensive to produce and everybody in it is fantastic. And, you know, the characters are clearly drawn. And it's to me, it was just so goddamn terrifying that I found it uncomfortable just to have it on, because at any minute, you know, I know it's not entirely true that any minute somebody could get their tongue cut out, but it wasn't entirely false either.
Yeah, so they toned it down after a while.
Yeah,
the first couple of years were rough.
It was so anxiety producing that I was just like, hey, this is unpleasant to watch, and it's cool, like watching it in this kind of like bits and pieces fashion, like I am curious to go, well, why did he do that? And like, you know, like how did he get there? And why did he shoot that guy with a crossbow? And like, it just, it's intriguing. But at the same time, I know, like, well, first of all, I know how it ends. So that's, and that, like, that was supremely disappointing.
Well, yeah, the last couple of years were a dog show.
Yeah. Like even not being a fan, like an active in, a viewer at all, like, you know, I think I watched this, like, the penultimate and then like the last episode of the season, like when they firebombed the entire city of King's Landing. I was like, oh, okay, well, that was insane. And then the bullshit thing where they kill the zombie army in that ridiculous fashion, and then they have a meeting, and then the whole thing is over. I'm like, wow, that was just trying to wrap this shit up, I guess.
Yeah, it was wet fart of an ending. Just terrible.
Wet fart of an ending. Yeah.
But he was good in it.
Yeah, everyone. I mean, that's the, like, nobody in that show was bad. Even when they were doing things that were dumb, no one was. You couldn't look at it and go like, "Yeah, well, that's bad acting." It was all fantastic. Even the writing was good. I'm a big fan of the old lady, the Olana, whatever her name is.
Yeah, she's just dead.
Oh, the actress just passed away?
Yeah, she was. The woman in the Avengers from the 60s. And she just passed away. She was old. She was like in her 80s or something.
Woman in the Avengers from the 60s?
Emma Peel. You know,
the old British show. Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about like a flashback sequence in the Marvel movies. Oh,
Her name was Diana Riggs. She was... Yeah, the old English show with the man and the woman.
Gotcha. Yeah, the Avengers, as my friends.
Yes, the Avengers.
But I've enjoyed watching scenes with her because she's hilarious.
Yeah, no, she was good in that show.
Yeah. But everyone in that show was good. So I kind of go, well, if you were in Game of Thrones, you can't be that bad. It's worth taking a look at. Like, so there's this show I think I mentioned called Criminal, I think it was called. With like, it's these weird like one act plays that get filmed, and it's a British TV show about a bunch of investigators that they're looking at, they look into a murder or a rape or something, and they haul someone in for questioning, and the show, they're all separate, like there's three episodes per series, and they have nothing to do with each other. It's just them having a conversation with this suspect about something or other, and sometimes the person did it, sometimes they didn't do it. They did a great one with David Tennant, who was fantastic, and the woman who played in Captain America, the Captain America's love interest. I can't think of the character name.
Hayley Atwell?
Yeah. And like, what's funny is seeing them like, so like, I know her from the British lady on the, you know, in Captain America, but she plays like a real East End sort of white trashy Londoner in that. And, you know, like with the, you know, the cheap clothes and the dyed pink hair and kind of an alcoholic. And it was just really interesting to see this actor play just a very different part than I think she's typically known for playing. And mm-hmm. So like they're fun, but they're basically plays. It's just a lot of talking for like an hour. And but they're good because they're different. Like they're not, it's very procedural, but it's also very intense and dramatic and pauses and close ups and things like that. And so whenever I see someone I know from like some Game of Thrones or something else British, like David Tennant with Doctor Who, I kind of go, all right, well, let me all watch that, because you have to begin somewhere with going through everything in Netflix and Amazon Prime. It's an onslaught of just entertainment. So.
All right, well, don't see this movie.
Don't see this movie. It's not good. And I don't believe Netflix when they say it was number 10 in the U.S.
I mean, I do, in that Netflix has become this bottomless chum bucket of stuff. But that doesn't mean it's worth watching.
They also don't give you any idea of what number 10 means. So, like, I think that started back when the pandemic hit. People really wanted to know what to watch on Netflix. And so Tiger King became a thing, and they began to publish on their website and on the app, like a ranking of like, these are the shows that people are watching. And, but they don't tell you how much of the show that they're watching. And so, like, if it's the number one movie, that means that, like, maybe 20 million people watch the first 4 minutes. But that doesn't mean they watch the whole movie. It means that many people watch the first 4 minutes. So their metrics are entirely private. They deliberately don't share that stuff with anybody. Amazon doesn't do it either, but Amazon doesn't care because this is just like a drop in the bucket for their business. It's like an afterthought.
Yeah.
You know, so. So, yeah. Don't see it. It's not good.
Don't see it. And I don't know what you should see instead, considering everything going on, but there's got to be something out there.
Yes, we'll get there eventually.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
They just pushed the Dune movie back to October of next year.
Oh, they just dropped that trailer, too.
Yeah. Well, they were pushing for Christmas, and they were like, you know what? Let's just forget it. It's not even worth attempting.
I never saw the original Dune. I never read the book. I don't think it's one of those things that can be filmed just because it seems so complicated and weird.
It's definitely weird.
Is Herbert or Heinlein?
I think it's Herbert.
Herbert, yeah. So, like, some of this sort of high science fiction is really difficult to commit. And I also don't think I like Timothée Chalamet. I've never seen him do any acting. I just don't like his face. I just don't. Yeah. So anyway,
I mean,
but
I read it. It was definitely not. It's a weird book.
Yeah, so. Very strange. But skip this one. It's not worth it. And we will, swear to God, we'll try to find something that you guys can watch.
We're trying.
We're doing our best, everybody.
You know, 50 different streaming services. There's got to be something on one of them. So.
Here I am watching old episodes of How I Met Your Mother.
Yeah.
Well, if you have any suggestions for what you think we should review and take a look at, you can let us know on Twitter or Instagram. We are at @3drinksinpod on both. You can tell us on Facebook. Or you can even email us at 3drinksinpodcast@gmail.com. Make sure that you go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or iHeartRadio, or any other streaming service, and subscribe. Tell your friends. Leave reviews. We really appreciate those. That's it, I think.
Yeah, I think that's it.
I think that's it, too. All right. As always, please drink responsibly, and we will talk to you all next time.
Bye.
Bye.